correctly. If you are going to fire valued employees so arbitrarily, Noble said, his grin widening, then a labor union is necessary to protect our rights. Now look, sir, I know what has happened. I have spoken to my father about it. He predicted that you would try to bundle me off for my own safety, and he instructed me to use my own judgment in the matter. Well then, use some judgment, Dan snapped. Moloch is playing a goddamned cat-and-mouse game. He's trying to terrify me, or make me feel guilty enough to surrender to him. His goons are methodically murdering the people around me. Maybe he's trying to get my key people to run away.
And your first reaction is to force me to run away?
You are the son of my closest friend, Dan said. And in the few months you've been here, I've come to think of you almost as my own son, or at least a close nephew. I don't want you to be killed. Noble raised a long, slim forefinger.
Point number one. I, too, have become very attached to you, almost like an uncle.
A second finger.
Two. You risked your life to rescue me and the others when the Russians took us prisoner.
It was my responsibility. I sent you on that mission. Ignoring Dan's reply, Noble lifted a third finger.
Three. You are having a meeting this afternoon with space industrialists from four other nations. My father agrees that it would be a good thing for me to represent Yamagata Industries and Japan at this meeting.
Dan rubbed his chin for a moment, thinking. If Saito can't or won't attend the meeting, it would be a good idea to have Nobo sitting in for him. Then the only power missing would be China, and in a way, Yamagata almost represents the Chinese as well as Japan.
Okay, he said. You're welcome to stay for the meeting, but then I want you on your way back home, understand?
Nobo did not bow his head as he would if he agreed with Dan. Instead, he said,
I have often heard my father say that you are rushing toward death, like a samurai warrior of olden times.
Your father is sometimes given to exaggeration. The young man shrugged.
That may be, but we are all moving toward our deaths. Death will come when it comes. It is part of life.
So's paying taxes, Dan grumbled. That doesn't mean you can't try to avoid it. They make a motley crew, Dan thought. Kulwesi, as tall and black as an American basketball star. Bavunia, looking like a brown pygmy next to him. Al-Hashimi, the hawk-nosed sheik, even in a Western-style business suit. And Chalons, the golden Polynesian, with the blood of at least four different races in him. They sat around the marble dining table in Dan's apartment. All morning long, Astro security personnel had combed the walls, the floors, the ceilings, even the adjoining buildings for listening devices. Metal mesh curtains shimmered across each window, letting the noonday sunlight in, but foiling microwave beams that might catch the vibrations of the windows or the very air inside the apartment and translate them into the words being spoken. Uniformed guards patrolled every floor of the buildings, and half of the men and women in street clothes who roamed through the lobby and hallways were Astro security employees. More guards covered the roof, and still more patrolled nearby in cruising unmarked cars and fluttering helicopters. Maybe Moloch's trying to get me to spend myself into bankruptcy, Dan thought as he contemplated the costs of such security. Each man and woman in his security forces had been thoroughly investigated when they had been hired, and checks of their loyalty went on all the time. But Dan knew from his own experience how easily someone could be bribed. And it was not always money that corrupted. Just as often, it was flattery, or revenge, or naked lust. One hand grenade in here would wipe out all the third world space industry leaders, he thought. Moloch could achieve his goal at a stroke. There'd be nobody left to operate in space except the Soviet Union. Luncheon was served by a trio of pretty young women who were trained bodyguards. Each man received a dish prepared especially for him out of the detailed dossiers maintained by Dan's computers. The aromas of roast goat and curried chicken dominated the room. Dan introduced Nobo, who sat at the far end of the table. The conversation during lunch was light, pleasant, guarded. But as the meal drew to its close, Dan tapped his fork against his water glass for their attention.
I think you all know what's going on, he said, putting the fork down on his emptied plate. If any of you don't, then you ought to fire your director of intelligence.
The men chuckled, somewhat uneasily, Dan thought.
Al-Hashimi, seated at Dan's right, said,
I understand that a young woman was murdered here last night.
That's right.
Regrettable, murmured Chalons. She was a victim of the war that the Soviets are waging against us.
Us?
All of us here at this table, Dan said firmly. They glanced at one another. Pavunia, his black eyes darting from one face to another, said in his sing-song English, But what has this unfortunate incident to do with us?
Everything, replied Dan.
I'm afraid I don't understand. The Soviet Union wants to be the only power operating in space. They have forced the United States and all the members of the old NATO alliance to renounce their space programs.
In the name of peace, said Kolwezi, his deep bass voice taking on an edge of sarcasm.
Sure, Dan replied. The same kind of peace they imposed in Poland and Afghanistan and Greece.
There are no lovers of the Soviet system here, Kolwezi said. You need not remind us of their atrocities.
Dan nodded an acknowledgement, then resumed. The six of us here at this table, together with the People's Republic of China, represent the only non-Soviet space efforts in existence.
Al-Hashimi allowed a thin smile to cross his face.
The six of us here at this table are the only private entrepreneurs operating in space, he corrected. Each of us flies the flag of a nation, but we each represent large corporations more truly than we represent Venezuela or Zaire or even Japan.
The others nodded.
Pavunia was somewhat grudging about it, Dan saw. Nationalism was important to the Indian.
Nobo easily agreed with Al-Hashimi.
Yamagata Industries and the government of Japan were as thoroughly interlinked as the two twining spirals of a DNA molecule.
Do you believe, Kolwezi asked, that the Soviets are opposed to us because we are capitalists?
Sure, said Dan. But there's a hard pragmatic reason behind their philosophical opposition. If they can eliminate us, if they can attain a total monopoly of space industries, manufacturing as well as raw materials, they gain a further stranglehold on the world's commerce.
Babunia shook his head in quick, disbelieving strokes,
reminding Dan of the nervous movements of a frightened brown rabbit.
But why would Soviet Russia do such a thing? The Russians have no enemies to fear. They have cowed the United States into surrender without firing a shot. America has retreated into isolationism. Western Europe depends on the Soviets for oil and natural gas. Soviet Russia is the world's most powerful nation. No one opposes her.
But it's not enough, Dan said. They want more.
How could they?
Greed. Philosophy. The natural momentum of growth. Sure, they've beaten the U.S. and Western Europe. They didn't have to resort to nuclear war. The West just pissed away its power until the Cold War was over and the Russians were the winners.
But there's the rest of the world. China, Japan, the Third World nations.
Russia has nothing to fear from them, Pavunia insisted.
I know that and you know it, but maybe those men in the Kremlin don't know it.
Or maybe they want to control the whole world.
Maybe they want even more. Maybe they want to rule the whole world, turn the entire goddamned world into one big, homogenized, tightly controlled Soviet state.
Al-Hashimi took a gold cigarette case from his jacket.
I haven't heard such rabid American anti-communist rantings in many years.
He put a cigarette in his mouth and lit it with a gold lighter.
It's very amusing.
Dan smiled back at him. It's amusing as long as the Soviets are paying a decent price for Arab oil. What happens when they take over the existing solar power satellites and start building new ones to serve Europe and Africa? Who buys your oil then?
Al-Hashimi leaned back in his chair and blew a long cloud of gray smoke toward the ceiling.
If and when the Soviets gain total control of space manufacturing, Dan went on, they will use that power to get total control of the nations we represent. Venezuela's manufacturing and oil exports will be threatened. India's exports of steel and automobiles.
How can that be? Pavunia demanded.
Dan replied, because I've shown them that they can get high-grade iron ore from asteroids, double-damn them to hell and back. They'll undercut India's prices for steel, and with zero-gravity processing, they'll be able to make steel alloys that are 20 times stronger weight for weight than anything you can make on Earth.
The Indian's swarthy face went ashen.
As the representative of Yamagata Industries, Nobo said softly, and Japan, I must admit that I find it hard to believe that the Russians could force Japan out of its space manufacturing operations.
Colwazy chuckled, a deep, throaty sound.